made his way to the bathroom. He closed the door behind him. I opened it. Nope. I don't trust you. Fine. Suit yourself, freak. I waited while he took care of business. Once he had washed his hands and pulled back his hair, I escorted him back to the bed and put the cuffs back on. He gave me no trouble. I passed the food over, and he gobbled it down messily.
You knocked me out,
he said between bites.
If I was in the shape I used to be, I would have kicked your ass.
Whatever you have to tell yourself, I said.
Don't get cocky. I've been around guys like you. I know your type. You're hired muscle. Just a trigger puller. I bet Earl brought you on because you're good at hurting things. You know what? That don't make you special. Hurting things is easy. Understanding them is hard.
I don't like to complicate things. I see the monster, I shoot the monster. There. Nice and simple, I said.
Let me let you in on a little secret, kid. Guys like you are a dime a dozen. A real hunter understands his prey. He knows how they think. He succeeds where others fail because he knows the monster better than he knows himself. I was the best hunter we've ever had because of that.
Whoever fights monsters should see to it that in the process he does not become a monster, I said.
And when you look long into an abyss, the abyss also looks into you.
Ah, an educated man.
Well, you're not as stupid as you look. Don't quote Nietzsche at me, kid. That German crackpot wouldn't know a real monster if it bit him on the ass.
Actually, I hated philosophy. I had memorized the quote from the intro of a video game.
You about done? I asked.
Julie told me a little bit about you.
You're the dreamer. You've been having visions. You want to know what I've got up here?
He tapped the side of his head with his fork, leaving ketchup in his hair.
You want me to help you find Lord Mashado?
Pretty much.
I can do it, you know. The other hunters can read those old books forever, but they ain't gonna answer your questions. It isn't what you read, it's putting the information together in your head like a puzzle. Only when you're all done can you really see the picture. I've had lots of time on my hands for the last 6 years. I've sat in a padded cell all day long with nothing to do but put those puzzles together. I can see the whole picture now. You fools are still trying to find your corner pieces and sorting them out by color.
Is there a point to this? Or are you just trying to get me to punch you in the head some more?
Here's the point. I can help you. I can tell you where and when Lord Mashado is going to use his artifact. I can tell you what to do. I can tell you how to stop him. I can even tell you how to kill him. The dead guy in your head can't answer those questions, but I can.
So why don't you just tell me what I need to know?
Because, kid, what's in it for me?
The world doesn't get destroyed. That sounds kind of beneficial, don't you think?
I tell you. You tell Earl. You guys kill Lord Mashado and the Seven. You save the world, cash big fat checks. You get to be heroes. I go back to Appleton and rot in my cell until the day I die. You want my help? You let me go and I'll tell you everything I know.
And I'm just supposed to let somebody who opened a gate to hell in the middle of Alabama walk free?
I learned from my mistakes. I won't do that again. I'm not as crazy as everybody thinks I am. I know the score. Let me loose. I promise not to meddle in that business again. I'll just disappear off the radar, and nobody needs to know where I went. I've got money, fake IDs, passports, all stashed. You let me go, and nobody ever hears from me again. I'll go down to Mexico and sip margaritas on the beach with pretty señoritas.
I'll run that past your daughter.
Julie's squeamish.
She's a goody-two-shoes like her mother. Believe me, I've learned from my mistakes. I'm done. Earl will tell you no. My dad will say no. They don't trust me. My offer is to you, kid. Think about it.
He smiled hopefully. I did not trust him as far as I could throw him. How about you give me a little information up front? Let me see if what you know is worth it.
I give you enough pieces of the puzzle, you'll figure it out yourself. You won't need me, and I go back to Appleton. On good days, maybe I get to play ping pong and leg irons with Dr. Nelson. Look out the window while crazy people whine about what monsters did to them. Like those pussies know jack squat about real torment. Whoopee! No way, kid. I talk, I walk. That's the deal.
Screw you, Ray. I took his empty plate and walked away.
Wait!
He cried. I paused with my hand on the doorknob.
You have to understand. I can't go back there.
I opened the door.
Stop. Listen. I tried to bring my wife back. Is that so wrong? I loved her. I know I made a mistake. I was desperate. You would do the same.
I loved her too much to let her go.
I know not to try again. I saw things in that rift. Things you can't even begin to understand. I know what's out there. My mind is scarred worse than your face. Believe me. I promise that it won't happen again.
Goodbye, Ray. I'll send somebody up around lunch for a bathroom break. I stepped out the door into the hall.
Wait, don't leave me alone. You want some information? Fine,
he shouted. I paused.
There is no real place of power. It isn't a fixed piece of geography. There's a nexus of magical energy. The place is where those lines intersect. They are always moving. They are always changing. But I know where and when they are. Those professors that got killed, it's because some of the dead cultures they studied had their fingers on the puzzle. They maybe had bits and pieces. I can see the whole puzzle. I can see the picture. I can even see the box the pieces came in. It's going to happen at the full moon.
Tell me more, Ray.
You have 3 days before the concept of linear time becomes obsolete. Lord Machado thinks he knows what he's doing. But he's wrong. The world you know is going to cease to exist. Billions will die, and the handful that survive are going to be nothing more than cattle living in a blinded stupor. Mankind is going to be nothing but food and entertainment for the old ones. You had better think about my offer, kid. The clock is ticking. In 3 days, it stops. Forever.
Your dad made me an offer. I told Julie when I found her on the main floor. She must have gotten bored after cleaning and hauling up all of the interesting weapons from the basement because she had busied herself by returning to her renovations.
Make yourself useful and hold this.
She handed me the end of a tape measure.
Put it against that edge there.
She walked a few steps and lowered the tape to the floor. She took a pencil from behind an ear and marked a spot on the floor.
I need more flooring. I've got enough to finish the front hall, but not the main entryway.
You don't want to hear this offer? I asked. I think that I already knew the answer to that one.
Let me guess. Let me go. I promise to be good. No more demon summoning, blah, blah, blah. I'll tell you what you need to know.
She let the tape measure snap closed in her hand and dropped it into a pocket. Pretty much. But he did say that the cursed one is going to strike on the full moon. That gives us just 3 days.
Not much time. Figures. Bad stuff always goes down on the full moon.
How did this get here?
She bent down to pick up a belt sander that was lying on the floor. Grunting in sudden pain, she paused and slowly stood back up.
Forgot. Big hole in my shoulder. Would you grab that for me? I need to put it away.
I picked up the sander. You should take it easy. She shook her head.
I can't. I'm a little tense. My insane dad is upstairs, in the home that I grew up in. It's just a bit awkward, is all. I like working on the house. It keeps my mind off of things, you know?
I nodded.
It helps me to keep busy. I feel better when I'm improving something.
The whole mansion was torn apart. Every room that I had been in so far had some project begun in it, but very few had been finished. Apparently, Julie had a lot of things that she did not want to dwell on. "You seem to be pretty good at it," I said. That was true enough. The work that was finished appeared to be meticulous and professional, which was not really a surprise, considering what I knew about Julie Shackelford's nature.
"Thanks."
She paused uncomfortably.
"Enough about my dingbat father. I'm just glad he didn't stab you with his plastic fork."
I did check the bathroom for guns before I let him go.
"Beat you to it."
She reached into her back pocket and pulled out a .38 Detective Special.
"Bathroom number 3 gun. I got them stashed all over."
"You really are my kind of girl." She smiled.
"Thanks. Most regular people think I'm insane."
"Screw regular people. They suck."
It was good to hear her laugh again.
"Since you're too injured to lay floor, how about a tour of the Heart of Dixie Historical Preservation Society headquarters?"
"That I can do. And by the way, I never said thanks for saving my life from that gargoyle. That was a little too close."
She absently touched the bandage on the side of her head. "No big deal. That was some pretty good driving."
"If that jackass in the truck would have just let us pass, I could have lost them."
"Jerk," I agreed.
"Tour?"
she asked. "Gladly." Chapter 18. The Shackelford ancestral home was an imposing structure. Once one of the finest of the great antebellum homes of the Old South, it was the crown jewel of a once massive plantation. Ages ago, it had been the center of thousands of acres of timber and farming cut out of the woods of Alabama. The original builder's heirs had sold the home and the property to the first Raymond Shackelford nearly 100 years before.
"You can see out this window where the slave quarters used to be. The kind of empty spot right there. You can still make out the foundations. They were pretty rickety and busted up by the time I was a kid."
Julie pointed out the back windows off of the main corridor.
"I burned them down when I was 12.
"Why? Some sort of protest against the injustice? A young girl trying to right the wrongs of the past?" I asked.
"Nothing so noble. Me and my brothers were learning how to make homemade napalm. Styrofoam packing peanuts dissolved into a bottle of gasoline. They make the best Molotov cocktails. I let one of mine get away from me. I'm just lucky that it didn't spread and burn the house down. Those were the days."
"I can understand. I did something similar once when I was a kid. My brother and I built a pipe bomb. Big thing. We smuggled powder out of my father's reloading room for almost a year so he wouldn't notice, mixed it with a whole bunch of other ingredients, detonated in the backyard when my folks weren't home. It was a little bit bigger boom than we expected, though. Dug a 4-foot trench in the yard, cut the gas main, and forced the neighborhood to evacuate."
"No wonder the ATF has your name on file," she said. "I wonder if all future monster hunters blow stuff up as kids."
"Probably. The ones that live that long, at least. I shrugged. Hey, I was an upstanding citizen until I met you guys.
I bet. Anyway, I was sad when the old slave quarters burned down. I was just a little girl. I hadn't really understood what they stood for. I mean, I knew what they were, but not why they were important.
Lot of history in the South, I stated.
Don't go getting high and mighty because of slavery. You grew up out west. You have no clue about the South. My family might own this house, but that doesn't mean that we approve of the kinds of things that happened here. I had ancestors who fought for the Confederacy, but I would be real surprised if any of them had two nickels to rub together, let alone owned a slave. People think that the South is racist, and it was, and some parts still are, but for the most part, we've dealt with our history. The biggest racists I've ever met aren't here. They're in politics. They are smug bastards. They're the ones that are quick to play the race card, the ones that pimp poverty. Those are the real bigots.
Touchy subject.
I guess. But Bubba Shackelford employed black hunters in his very first group of professional monster killers. Remember, flexible minds. He made that little credo up. That's not just about the unnatural. It's about how you look at the world. He only cared if they could fight, and that they kept it together when strange stuff started. They were some pretty tough hunters, too. You don't want to know what happened to the Klan boys that messed with them.
I can guess. I could only imagine that after dealing with werewolves and vampires, yokels hiding under white sheets were not that big of a deal.
Rumor has it that a bunch of night riders ended up buried in the back 40. Great-great-grandpa never had much trouble from those folks after that.
She changed the subject.
Let me show you the ballroom. This is probably my favorite room in the whole house.
She pushed open some double doors and led the way into a huge space. The floor was vast and open. Ornate antique chairs lined the walls, and an opulent crystal chandelier hung from the ceiling. Most of the walls were mirrored, with old-fashioned and slightly distorted glass. A large stage filled the back corner of the room, complete with carved pillars capped in brass. Staircases spiraled around and upward to the second floor, perfect for the southern belles of old to descend for their grand entrances. I walked into the room. My boots echoed on the worn, smooth wood, stirring up small clouds of dust. I could imagine the parties of bejeweled women and men in Confederate gray, royalty of a forgotten time and kingdom. Impressive.
I haven't done any work in here. I don't really want to. I'm just going to leave this one alone. We never used this room growing up. If this old place has a soul, it would be in this room. So I leave it closed.
I watched her reflection in one of the many mirrors. She awkwardly placed her hands into the pockets of her jeans.
I know it sounds silly, but that's how it is.
I understand, I said. Not really, but it seemed like the correct answer. Even though there had not been any music played in this room for generations, I had to resist the urge to ask her to dance.
Through here is the formal living room. Now this one we used a little, for guests and that kind of thing.
I followed her through another set of double doors into a much less lavish room. This one was under drastic construction. Tarps had been thrown over the furniture, and sawdust covered almost everything. Only one wall was not in the process of being stripped and repainted. It was covered in painted portraits of Julie's ancestors.
5 generations of monster hunters, she proclaimed, and a few who decided to stay out of the family business. But we still love them, too, even if they are strange.
There were dozens of paintings, most done in a classically formal style, kind of stuffy, and not really befitting the homespun, slightly insane good nature of the family as I knew them. The first painting was of Raymond Bubba Shackelford, followed by a picture of his wife and children, and then each of the succeeding generations after that. There was a single blank spot on the wall where Raymond II was missing. But other than that, there were a lot of pictures up there. In totality, it created a beast of a family tree. The last of the pictures were of people I recognized. The Ray Shackelford IV that I knew was a wild-eyed lunatic was captured on canvas as a handsome, square-jawed man. His wife, Susan, had looked almost exactly like Julie did today. My tour guide's portrait must have been taken when she was younger. I did not feel that the painting had done her justice. She looked slightly artificial. I felt for the painter. Capturing something like Julie's beauty had to be difficult. You could get the technical details correct, but how could you convey the spirit? Lots of Raymonds. Must be kind of hard to keep track of them.
It's a bit of a tradition. Oldest son got the name. I'm the oldest in my family, so it went to my younger brother.
She pointed at one of the last of the portraits. He resembled his father. Where is he now?
Dead,
she said sadly.
It's been a few years.
I'm sorry.
No. He died well. You can't be sorry for somebody that brave. You can be sad, but not sorry. He earned his plaque at the compound. Even the best of us get it eventually.
What happened? I don't know why I asked her, but I did. She hesitated only briefly before speaking.
1995. At the Christmas party. Monster Hunter International's 100th anniversary. He was one of the 97 hunters killed that night. He was just a newbie, but he fought like a champion. You should have seen him. He sure was something.
I've never heard the whole story. She gestured at one of the tarp-covered couches. I sat, and she sat next to me, under the watchful painted eyes of her ancestors. We sunk into the deep cushions with a rustle of plastic. I could taste the sawdust in the air.
It was a great party. Hunters know how to throw a great party, you know, live fast, party hard, die young. That kind of philosophy tends to grow amongst people with such a dangerous job. Everybody who wasn't in the middle of a case was there, so most of us at least. Well, anyway, it was at a resort near Gulf Shores, right on the beach. Beautiful spot. Dad had picked it out, reserved it for us. At the time, I was just glad that he seemed to be coming out of his mourning, coming out of the archives and participating with the living again. I had been worried about him for so long. Little did I know that he had picked that spot because it was the right place and the right time for his damned summoning.
She brushed aside some dust.
I should have seen it coming.
You couldn't have known. Nobody could have.
I know. But that doesn't change the fact that it was my job to know. I'm the historian. I'm the researcher. I'm supposed to be the one with the answers. That's my job. And this one was right under my nose. I knew Dad was sad about Mom's death, but I never expected him to do something like this. The resort was his place of power. We didn't know until later that it was built on top of what used to be some tribe's sacred ground. It was his chance to bring her back. While the rest of us were gathering down at the resort, he planted a bomb in the archives. None of us ever learned the real logic behind that. He had the information he needed stored in his head, so he probably wanted to destroy the books that had the information on how to stop him just in case. That's my guess, anyway. Burned a big chunk of it down.
She sighed, apparently studying her father's portrait, trying to discern reason behind the painted mask. She continued.
Every hunter that could be there was there. Even the retired ones. Lots of wives, husbands, girlfriends, boyfriends, dates. It was a great big party. Even the caterers and the bartenders had been picked from people who knew what was up. people who knew about monsters and who knew what we were. We could let our hair down. There weren't any secrets being kept in that room. I don't know why Dad wanted such an audience, but he had it. At midnight, Dad went to the center of the dance floor, splashed some blood in a circle, and said a few words. I think most of the folks near him thought that he was just drunk or something. I saw him doing it. I didn't understand, but I knew that it was wrong. I knew that something bad was about to happen. His voice became louder, almost like he was talking with a megaphone. I've heard about every language there is, but not this one. Whatever it wasn't meant to be pronounced with a human tongue. The blood caught on fire, and the floor under him disappeared. It just kind of opened right up. I was far enough away that I didn't get to see where it opened to, but some of the others did. They died first.
"What was it?" I asked. Julie appeared shaken as she recalled the memory.
"A rift. To someplace else. We don't really know where. We say hell, but that isn't really right. That's just our way of explaining something that we don't understand. But it was not on Earth, that's for sure. Things came out of that rift. Bad things. I can't even begin to describe them. They tore through the party like the hunters were made out of tissue paper. Dad's plan had gone wrong. Bad wrong."
She unconsciously clenched her fists, the muscles in her jaw contracted, and her eyes narrowed angrily at the memory.
"We fought. We fought hard. But we had been caught unaware, and these things were tough. More and more of them kept pouring through the hole every second, and they weren't going to stop. We held them. We killed them until their husks were piled waist deep. We couldn't retreat because they just kept flooding out the rift. If we gave up at the gate, then these things would have filled the country. Don't ask me how I know that, but somehow we all did. Every inch we gave up was one more inch that would no longer belong to our world. It would belong to them. Everybody stood and fought. No hunter ran."
I reached over and grasped her hand. She was shaking.
"We didn't have armor. Hell, all I had was a cute little black dress. All we had were handguns. Of course, everybody was packing. I mean, think about the crowd that we're talking about here. Some hunters made it to their vehicles and grabbed heavier weapons and came back. Others had been thoughtful enough to have some already stashed at the resort. After the first few minutes, I was out of ammo and down to using a table leg as a club. My brother Ray stood with me. All he had was a broken beer bottle. I watched. Watched as something pulled his intestines out and painted the ceiling with them. I killed it, but it was too late. I didn't even have time to see him die. I was too busy fighting."
Silent moments passed as she regained her composure. She lifted her glasses and wiped under her eyes.
"Sorry."
"No. No, that's okay," I said.
"Right after my brother was hit, something big bumped against the rift. Unbelievably big. It's hard to explain, but all I saw was its pupil. But that was bigger than this house. The rift was growing. It was coming through into this world. Grenades and rockets just made it blink. If it came through, then this world was gone. We all knew it. Earl saved us. He made his way into the rift. He killed anything that came near him. He came out a second later with my dad slung over his shoulder. When Dad was pulled through, the rift collapsed. We had beaten them, whatever they were. Then we had to run. The resort had caught on fire. The building was coming down. I carried one of my wounded friends out, and by the time I made it outside, she had already started to convulse. poor Piper. Apparently the monsters from the rift were poisonous. She died in my arms. The building burned. It was still burning when the feds arrived. It burned for 3 straight days. Nothing could put it out. When it was done, there was nothing but ash and charred bones that weren't human.
She stared off into space, reunited once more with the memories of her fallen family and comrades. I did not speak.
3/4 of us were dead, and some who had been too close to that rift just walked away and never came back. 97 dead hunters and 40 dead guests and resort staff. Within a few days, an executive order was issued, and we were shut down. The feds took my dad away. The news reported that an oil tanker had run aground and caught fire. I went to a lot of funerals.
Julie, I don't know what to say. She put her head down and cried softly. I put my arm around her and waited for her to stop. She sobbed a few times as she was temporarily overcome with emotion.
I'm okay.
She raised her head, sniffed, but then pushed away and stood proudly.
And now you know about us. You know the whole story. And you know why I don't give a shit if that son of a bitch who claims to be my father lives or dies. It would be better for a whole lot of people if his damned black heart quit beating. But if he lives, I think that Appleton is far too nice a place to hold him. If I had my way, I would have left him in that rift. He's caused too much pain. He isn't my father. He's nothing but a monster. And I'll be damned if I'm going to let him be taken to help some other monster unleash that kind of terror on my world again.
I know.
Good.
She stopped.
I loved my brother. I miss him still. And I lost friends, people I've known since I was a kid. I hold him responsible for this. So that's why I've been acting the way I have. I'm sorry if I've been harsh, but I'll kill him before I let him go free.
If anything, I think you've shown remarkable restraint. Thanks for telling me the story. She was an interesting woman, to say the least. I was still curious. What did you do next?
What do you mean?
She asked. After the company was shut down, until we started back up, what did you do?
Well,
she sat back down next to me with a creak of plastic. I don't think that she had expected to continue her story.
I went back to school, finished up my degrees, tried to be normal for a while.
Normal? I had been struggling with the concept myself, doubting myself, my choices, and my abilities. It was strange to hear Julie, super monster hunter Julie Shackelford, say the same thing. Strange, but comforting.
You know, not a crazed monster killer. I didn't fight evil. I didn't do anything like that. I went to college. I went on dates. I got a job. I didn't really need the money, but I wanted to be like everybody else. I started working on this house as a hobby. I painted.
You paint?
A little,
she answered sheepishly. Can I see them? I asked.
They're not very good. Maybe another time.
I bet they're fine, I assured her. Another time, then.
Earl kept hunting. Only now he had to work out of the country and had to compete against established companies with more assets and the backing of their respective governments. Milo and Sam and the others like them kept hunting freelance overseas. They would contact me, invite me to come work with them, but I always turned them down. I wanted to pretend that world never existed.
I can see why.
Grandpa got sick. The shock of what his son had done almost killed him. He actually came and lived here for a while with a nurse. You can imagine how well he did without hunters to boss around. I tried to help him, but even he encouraged me to go work with Earl and the other survivors. I turned him down, too, and I think it made him even sicker. I vowed that the family legacy was going to die with me. No more Shackelfords were going to hunt monsters ever again.
"So what happened?" I asked. I could not imagine having gone through the things that she had. It made me put my own family relationships in perspective. Nobody in my family had ever summoned any demons, at least as far as I was aware.
I was in school. Students started disappearing on campus. Young girls. The police said that it was a serial killer. The whole community was scared to death. But I knew what it really was. I could recognize the signs. I ignored it at first. It was somebody else's problem. That world didn't exist for me anymore. I was just a grad student working on my thesis. I pretended that it was just a normal human killer, and that the authorities would handle it.
It didn't work out, did it?
It never does. A friend of mine was next. Got nailed while coming out of the library late one night. They never found her head. She was a nice kid, freshman, from a little town in Illinois, if I remember right. That one was my fault. Don't try to disagree. You of all people understand, Owen. I tracked the vampires down. I found their lair. They were sloppy new creations. Weak, stupid, and hungry. I went in alone. First time I've ever hunted solo. I spent the whole day staking and chopping, going from one coffin or hole to the next. Finally, I thought that I was going to run out of daylight before I had found them all, so I used some of those homemade Molotovs and burned the science building down. The killing stopped, and the cops figured that their imaginary serial killer had moved on. Police never caught the arsonist.
She smiled weakly.
I finished my dissertation the next week, boarded up this house, and joined Earl and the others on a case in Uruguay. A few years later, we're back in business. I've never looked back.
Are you glad?
What do you think?
She snorted.
I was deluding myself in school. Normal is an illusion. Normalcy doesn't exist.
She gestured at the wall of paintings.
That is normal. These people are real. All that stuff I told you back at your apartment when we were trying to recruit you? Yes, I do actually believe that. I believe in what we do. It's more than just a job. It's more than just a puff check.
It's a calling, I said. We sat in silence beneath the pictures. We had an understanding. You have another brother? I asked, pointing at the last picture. He looked more like Julie.
Nate,
she laughed.
He wants to kill monsters so bad he can taste it.
Where's he at now?
Seattle. He went through the last class of newbies. He's doing okay from what I hear. I made sure that he's with a great team who'll keep him alive long enough that his enthusiasm gets tempered with experience. He's 19. You like him. He's just insane enough to be entertaining.
She put her hand on my knee. I could not tell if she had done it on purpose or if she had done it without thinking. Either one was fine with me.
Well, that's pretty much the tour. Sorry I got all blubbery and emotional on you.
Julie, if you didn't get emotional about that, then you wouldn't be human. Thanks for the tour. I can tell you love this house.
I can't say why, but I do. One of these days I'm going to get it all fixed up. I could probably hire professionals to do it and just get it over with. But that doesn't seem right. There are a lot of memories here.
She suddenly snapped her fingers.
Wait a second. I've got something for you.
She jumped up and walked quickly to the door.
I'll be back in a minute. I've just got to find it.
I sat on the plastic-covered couch and waited. After a few minutes, I grew restless and decided to check out the portraits more closely. The Shackelfords were one interesting group. Heroes, villains, and everything in between. I stood close to the wall and examined the intricate paintings. Julie's grandfather had been a handsome man before he had lost his eye and been so disfigured. I could see the resemblance to his son, and they both looked slightly like Earl Harbinger. I was not exactly sure how he was related, but there was no picture of him on the wall, and there were no Harbingers listed at all. Looking at the other pictures, I decided that Julie was very lucky that she took after her mother. Besides the lack of glasses and the slightly outdated hairstyle, they could have been the same person. I would imagine that a historian would be able to compile quite the entertaining book about this family. Of course, the government would probably end up sending somebody like Agent Franks to the author's home to shoot him in the brain. The one blank spot on the wall was interesting, but I did not dwell on it for long. Even an auditor's curiosity only runs so deep when there are other matters at hand. Julie returned with a dust-covered wooden case.
Found it.
She sat on a tarped-over table and opened the metal clasps.
Now you are going to appreciate this, Mr. Gunnut.
She opened the box with a flourish. Inside the molded case were two pistols. One was big, and the other small, a matched pair down to the finishes.
Go ahead. Check them out.
The guns were custom. STI frames. The full size had an extended threaded barrel and was complete with a rail for a mounted light. The smaller one was a custom chopped version, cut down in every possible dimension for concealment. For a competition nut like myself, these pistols were the kind of thing that I dreamed about. Normal men had pornography. I had gun magazines. They were beautiful.
2011 frame, 14 rounds of 45 in the big one, 20 with the extended mags, 10 in the little one, but it can take the full-size mags. They just hang out a bit. I work them over so they're reliable with our silver bullets. Match barrels. These are scary accurate. But clearances are loose enough that these should be able to get really gunked up and still work fine,
she told me proudly. I pulled back the slide to check the chamber, and it glided as smoothly as silk. I checked the trigger. The hammer fell with a snap. It was possibly the nicest trigger I had ever felt on any weapon, ever.
These were made for somebody with mutant hands. Notice even the long trigger. Extended safeties for shooting high thumb. Beaver tail. Small mag release so big-handed shooters don't release them by accident. You guys don't need to shift your grip to change mags anyway.
Sweet. Did you do these yourself?
They were an old project.
I gently put the guns back in the box. They're beautiful. Much nicer than my old one. I've gone through quite a few guns this week. She closed the box, snapped the clasps closed, and shoved it over toward me. I looked at it in confusion for a moment.
You'd better be more careful with these, then. Lose them and I'll kill you.
But, you're just giving these to me? I asked. Why?
I have these lying around the house. They don't fit me at all. Some hunter with ham fists needs to put them to good use, and you currently don't have a pistol at all. My little brother won't use them. He's a Glock nut. Poor deluded bastard. Plus, the way these things shoot, they need to be in the hands of a real pistolero. You'll have to do.
She smiled.
Consider it my way of saying thank you for saving my life.
Thanks, I said. It was the nicest gift that anyone had ever given me.
Look, I've got to go, she said, sounding almost sheepish. I need to take care of some things.
Thanks, was all that I could think of to say.
Don't mention it.
She winked at me and walked away. I watched her leave the room before opening the case and examining the fine weapons again. I did not want to look like a total dweeb in front of her, but for me, Christmas had come real early. Grinning like an idiot, I field-stripped and checked the guns. The case even came with a cleaning kit. I lubed the guns, did several practice draws, adjusting my grip each time, until the sights snapped unconsciously into place. Finally, I forced myself to put them down. I needed to take over for Trip on the perimeter. It was my turn to stand guard. I noticed something as I started to shut the case. The foam in the top half had come slightly undone. Between the foam and the wood was an envelope. The envelope was blank, but it contained a small, handwritten note.
Dear Ray, I hope you like these. After that Luska ate your other guns, I thought I would do something nice for you. I built these up just the way you like them. Milo's been teaching me everything he knows about gunsmithing, and I think that these have come out really good. Dad's doing better. He's been really excited, looking forward to the 100th anniversary party. Should be a blast. Nate's bummed he can't come. Earl is doing good. Piper Kavanaugh has been dying to talk to you. I think she has a crush on you. She's cute. You two should hook up. See you at the party. I love you, bro. Hope you like the guns. Julie. 12-2-95.
I carefully refolded the note, placed it in its envelope, and put it back in the case. Trip was waiting for me on the porch. We were not taking any chances, and we were taking turns with one heavily armed and armored hunter outside to watch the skies for more gargoyles. Of course, all of us were wearing our radios, and the person patrolling the outside checked in constantly. If there had been more of us available, we would have worked in pairs and had a better rotation. But as it was, there were only the four of us on our little babysitting detail.
Holly is watching the video feeds. Julie has one heck of a system installed here. Don't go more than 20 yards from the building or you'll probably activate a sensor. Check in with her every few minutes.
He handed me the RPG. If anything suspicious landed on the property, we weren't going to screw around. The huge rocket-propelled grenade would take out an armored vehicle, so a gargoyle would not be a significant problem.
You learned how to use one of these, right?
Dude, please. I patted the lethal tube gently. If third-world goat herders could figure out an RPG, I wasn't worried. Even though I had not shot one yet, Milo had trained us in their basic use. I was looking forward to firing one. And if the target happened to be a 10-foot-tall, animated chunk of rock, that was fine by me.
Never mind. I forgot I was talking to the combat accountant. I haven't seen anything except for bugs and a cottonmouth.
Like the killer snake cottonmouth? I asked, glancing nervously at the ground.
Yeah, but it was just a baby. You should have seen the ones we grow in Florida. They climb trees and drop on you. When you're on the river fishing, they'll swim out to your boat and climb in. Mean little bastards.
He told me this with a straight enough face that I was not quite sure if he was making it up or not.
Anyway, if you need me, I'll be on the radio.
Okay. He started to walk away. I stopped him. Hey, Trip, one last thing. Thanks for coming out here to help me and Julie, I told him. I appreciate it.
Dude, don't worry about it. Harbinger needed somebody not very important to the feds, is all.
Still, thanks, I said. He shrugged and went back into the house. The screen door clattered behind him. I shifted the RPG to one shoulder and started my patrol. The afternoon air was thick with humidity, and moisture gleamed on the surrounding foliage. The once cleared farmland that had surrounded the plantation had been retaken by swift-growing plants, including the evil nemesis of all that was good in the plant world, kudzu. It was stiflingly hot in my armor, and sweat ran freely down my back. I had left my hockey helmet behind, in favor of a simple ball cap to keep the sun out of my eyes. I sipped constantly from my camelback. Big guys dehydrate fast in the summer. I did not see anything of note as I passed the time. Holly checked in every few minutes to make sure that nothing was trying to kill me. Besides the bloodthirsty clouds of gnats, of course. So far I liked the South. I liked the people and their attitude. But I sure could do without all the damn gnats, mosquitoes, chiggers, ticks, and other things interested in eating me. As I approached the remains of the old slave quarters, I noticed one solid piece of construction not destroyed down to its foundations. It was a tiny building, slightly lopsided from settling over time, probably only 10 feet across, but constructed out of thick mortared stones. There was a very heavy door, but it was hanging open on massive, rusty hinges. I debated it briefly, but decided to take a look inside the old relic. It must have been some sort of prison cell for the slaves so long ago. The interior of the room was empty, but the few small windows were blocked with thick steel bars set deep into the stones. Thin shafts of light pierced the gloom, but not nearly enough to see by. The inside of the door was banded with iron slats, and the door itself was constructed of ancient pieces of wood, almost big enough to serve as railroad ties. It was a construction far heavier than possibly needed to keep anyone from escaping. There was a latch on the door frame where a big crossbeam could be set to keep the door closed, probably held in place by a long-since-missing chain and padlock. The air was stale and damp with mildew. I entered the cell. It was dark. I blinked a few times, but my eyes were adjusted to the summer sunlight outside. Raising Abomination slightly from its tack sling, I activated the powerful weapon-mounted flashlight. The room was instantly flooded in brightness. Much better. The texture of the stone walls was strange. It took me a moment to understand exactly what it was that I was looking at. Scratches. Tens of thousands of scratches. Some sort of hard and sharp implement had scratched every reachable surface. The only clear spots on the walls were more than 10 feet high. But even then there were a few marks above that where the creator must have gotten a running start. I looked down. Even the floor was torn with a patchwork of deep marks. The marks were deep, as if struck into the rock with great force. An involuntary shudder passed down my now cold spine. I did not understand what had made the marks, but someone had spent a whole lot of time tearing at the tiny prison. It had to be hundreds of hours worth of either methodical work, or perhaps savage frenzy. Now uncomfortable, I left the flashlight on until I was back out in the sunlight. Holly relieved me on guard duty a few hours later. I took a turn watching the security cameras. It was a monotonous job, but somebody had to do it. At least the little room with the monitors had a ceiling fan. The central air had died, and none of us had been able to fix it. The security system was impressive. Motion detectors, pressure sensors, and video in regular and thermal images. The most paranoid recluse would be proud to own this system. Very fitting for the home of a monster hunter. Holly appeared on one of the screens. I was glad to see that she had paid attention to her lessons in tactics and was varying her route to keep any tunneling creatures from being able to set up an ambush. My earpiece crackled as she checked in.
Nada, I almost wish that something would attack. This is boring, she told me.
On the monitor, she moved the RPG to her other hand.
I would love to blast something. These things are awesome.
It worked pretty good for you back on that boat.
Yeah, you missed it since you were busy drowning. Turned those whites into chum. RPGs rock.
She went back to her patrol. I went back to my monitors. An alarm sounded, and a red light on the control panel started to flash. We have company, I said into the radio as I checked the appropriate camera. A car is coming up the lane. Julie's voice came over the radio.
Can you tell who it is?
Negative. There was a brief pause as she digested the information.
Everybody assemble toward the front. Except for Gretchen, stay back in case one of us is wounded. Holly, use the corner of the house as cover. Trip, you and me, front porch. Owen, second floor balcony. Be ready for anything.
It's daylight. At least it can't be vampires, I said as I left the control room and headed for my assigned area. I swung Abomination around my back and grabbed the flat-top AR-15 that was mounted over the doorway. If I needed to engage targets off the second floor, the .223 rifle would be better suited for that task than my relatively short-range shotgun. I chambered around. I loved Julie's idea of home decor. She had a weapon stashed every 10 feet.
Could be anything. We didn't know the CO had gargoyles either, Julie said.
Now even she was using the abbreviated form.
What if it's the feds? Asked Holly. I've got an RPG, she added helpfully. Hold your fire, Julie ordered.
Somehow I did not find that comforting. I found a spot on the balcony overlooking the front approach. I left the window closed. If I needed to shoot, I could do so through the glass, and there was no need to give away my position beforehand. I grabbed a nearby dresser and pulled it into position to use as a rest. I gazed through the 4X magnification of the Trigicon scope. The car was a new black Mercedes, and it was approaching rapidly, spinning up a cloud of dust behind it. I put the illuminated reticle on the car's windshield. I only see the driver. No visible passengers. The windows are tinted. Hard to tell.
Roger that, Julie responded. Everybody get ready. I'll walk out to meet them. It might just be somebody lost, or a salesman, or the Jehovah's Witnesses or something. J-dubs, huh? Like I said, I've got a perfectly good RPG, Holly offered.
Mercedes is at 200 yards and closing.
Mercedes?
She responded hopefully. Yes, a new black one, I replied through my mic. It was quiet. I watched the car pull into the courtyard and stop next to the dry fountain. The scope vibrated slightly as I waited for the driver to exit. We waited as the driver took his sweet time putting his sunglasses away and checking his hair in the interior mirror. Finally, the door opened, and the driver's expensive Italian shoes touched down on the gravel. I exhaled slowly, perfectly balanced, ready to shoot. Julie's back appeared in my field of vision, quickly approaching the Mercedes. The man unfolded himself gracefully out of the vehicle. He was tall, handsome, and wearing a finely tailored suit. Julie hugged the driver, and I watched her kiss him through 4X magnification. Shit. It was Grant Jefferson, the insufferable little ass clown. I put the safety back on the rifle and moved the muzzle into an upward direction. I swore and violently kicked the helpless animal.